Good evening.
Good evening.
It's great to see you tonight. I appreciate your presence here so that we can study God's Word together. Something that it was on the slideshow for the announcements, but just in case you didn't see it, the Thursday night ladies Bible class, that is set to resume on March 16th, and it's at 6 o'clock, right? 6 o'clock in the fellowship hall. And so ladies, make sure you mark that, March 16th. That'll start back up the Thursday night ladies Bible class at 6 o'clock in the fellowship hall. We've been looking at the book of Romans, studying through it a little bit at a time. When I sat down to do the book of Romans, I set it up to try to keep the lessons between 15 and 20 minutes. Trying to just do a little bit at a time as we walk through the book. One of my good friends, Ed Robinson, he is the deacon at the Martin Church of Christ. He's the individual that actually asked me to come speak at the Student Center. When Jared Bailey passed away, one of the classes that they needed to take care of was the Sunday Bible class for the college students. And so him and three other men sat down, and one of them being an elder, and they had 16 weeks that they had to fill. And they had just finished, before Jared passed away, they had just finished the book of Acts. And so the elder said, well, why don't we just do the book of Romans? It's 16 chapters. We can do one chapter each class. And Ed looked at him and said, have you ever studied Romans in depth? And when Ed and I were talking about it, I was like, man, I said, we're covering chapter 3. It's going to take me at least four lessons going, 15 to 20 minutes at a time just to get through chapter 3. And so he said that they're doing it, but he said, we're not going very deep at all. We're like hitting the high points as we go along. But I hope this study's been beneficial to you. And really, the book of Romans is all about God's grace and how God has shown grace to man. And so as the book starts out, as we've been noticing, Paul starts out looking at the problem of sin. And in Romans chapter 1 and verse 16, he lays out that thesis statement, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation to the Jew first and also to the Greek. That the answer to the sin problem is the gospel. It is the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus. It is what God has done for us. And as Paul goes on, he then sets out to show how serious the problem of sin is. The rest of chapter 1, he lays out how the Gentiles had sinned. As you move to chapter 2, he looks at how the Jews have sinned. And as we come to chapter 3, he's still looking at this idea, but he's showing now that all have sinned. And we split up the chapter in several points, and we were looking at last week these objections that were answered. As you come to chapter 3 in verses 1 through 8, Paul takes what is kind of like a dialogue format. And he begins to handle some objections that the Jews are going to possibly raise. And they're raising these objections based off of the closing of chapter 2. Because as Paul closed out chapter 2, he talked about how circumcision was no longer in effect. In verses 28 and 29, which really sets the backdrop for chapter 3, he said, for he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men, but from God. Based off of that statement, there are four questions that are raised and four answers that are given. Last week we noticed the first question and answer where they asked, well then what was the profit? What advantage had the Jew if circumcision is no longer in effect? And Paul answered that by saying, well the Jew had a great advantage because they had the very words of God. They knew exactly what God wanted from them because God had laid that out for them. That moved us to our second question and answer where they began to say, well then did our unbelief basically make the promises of God, the faithfulness of God, did that cause that to him to not be able to keep those promises? And of course, Paul responds, certainly not. God was able to keep the promises that he made, and the Jews, their faithfulness or unfaithfulness did not affect God's ability to keep those promises. And that brings us tonight to our third question and answer that we want to notice. beginning in verse 5, in verses 5 and 6, we begin to see another question form. And it's a question that begins to form because the Jews are trying to excuse their sin. They're trying to make an excuse for their sin. And so they say, but if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Remember in verse 4, Paul had quoted from Psalm 51. He had looked back there at that psalm that was written by David when David had sinned with Bathsheba and everything that followed. And we see that that psalm is showing that God is righteous, that God is just, that God is right when He punishes sin. But now they're saying, well then, our unrighteousness shows that God's righteous. So God shouldn't punish us. And that's what they say, just say, is God unjust who inflicts wrath? It sounds crazy what they're saying, but this is where their mindset has gone to. That our unrighteousness demonstrates God's righteousness. And so it's okay that we're unrighteous because that shows that God's righteous. And if it shows that God's righteous, then God's wrong if He punishes us for being unrighteous. You got that? Paul then, you see in parentheses, I speak as a man. One translation says, I'm using human words. In other words, this is what happens when we apply human reasoning. They're looking at this and they're trying to excuse their sin. And while it seems crazy what they're saying, mankind goes to extremes when they try to justify their sin. When they try to show that, hey, what I did really, it wasn't that big of a deal. But notice Paul's response. Certainly not. He says, for then how will God judge the world? If God is unjust who inflicts wrath, in other words, who punishes, well then how is God going to judge the world? It won't be possible. If He's unjust for punishing, well then when He judges the world, there's no judgment to pass down. Paul says that's not how that works. And here's what's funny about it. Their own reasoning has brought them to the point that the Gentiles that they love to condemn, well, according to their own reasoning, they're not condemned. Y'all, this is what happens when we try to justify sin. This is what happens when we try to say that what we did, it's not a big deal. We begin to make all of this circular reasoning that goes nowhere. That brings us to a fourth question and answer. That's found in verses 7 and 8. He says, for if the truth of God has increased through my lie to His glory, why am I also still judged as a sinner? And why not say, let us do evil that good may come? Notice, they're still on this idea, well, the truth of God's increased because of the wrongs that I've done. They're still on this idea that their sin is somehow magnifying God. Paul says, that's not the way that this works. He says, as we are slanderous reported and as some affirm that we say, some are saying that this is what Paul has said. Let us do evil that good may come of it. We see the same reasoning take place as you come over to chapter 6. Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? And you remember Paul's response? God forbid. It's the same line of reasoning here. The more that we sin, the more evil that we do, well then the bigger the spotlight is on the goodness of God. And Paul says, that's not how it works. Paul says here, I haven't said that. You slanderously reported and affirmed that we've said this when we never said this. This isn't the truth. But notice how Paul closes out in verse 8, their condemnation is just. The condemnation that they receive because of the sin that they committed, Paul said, that's what's just. Paul's going back and forth with this individual that and has answered these questions, handled these objections. And that brings us to our second point in chapter 3. And that is sinfulness acknowledged. And we're just going to get one verse into this point tonight. But at this point, Paul begins to build the argument that all have sinned. He's dealt with the Gentiles. He's dealt with the Jews. He's handled these possible objections that might be raised to what he's trying to show. But now he begins to build the point that everyone has sinned. In verse 9, he says, "What then? Are we better than they?" Paul raises the question to the Jews. Well, because Paul himself was a Jew, remember? And so he says, well, are we better than the Gentiles then? Because that's what the Jews thought, wasn't it? That was the Jewish mindset, that they were better than the Gentiles. That they were God's chosen people. And as a result, they were better than they were. But Paul's already shown that both Jew and Gentile had sinned. Both Jew and Gentile had fallen short. And so he raises the question, are we better than they? And he said, not at all. I had the opportunity when I was preaching in Demopolis to teach a class at the Marengo County Jail. And one of the things that I tried to get through to the men that I talked with and taught, because it was a smaller group, which made it a little bit more intimate. You were able to sit down and have conversations and things. And one of the things I told them one time is like, guys, we've all sinned. No, I've sinned and you've sinned. The only real difference is the consequence of your sins brought you here. But that doesn't make me any better than you. And in essence, that's what Paul is saying here. The Jews are not better than the Gentiles. He says, for we have previously charged both Jews and Greeks that all are under sin. Later on, Paul will say all have sinned. But here notice he says all are under sin. It's the Greek word hupo. And it has the idea of being under bondage. And that's what he's saying, both Jew and Gentile have been under the bondage of sin. The consequences of sin, y'all, that's equal opportunity. Jew or Gentile didn't matter. They all were under this bondage that sin has. You know the quote as well as I do because I've used it many times. Sin will take you farther than you want to go. It will charge you more than you want to pay. And it will keep you longer than you want it to stay. And it will do it every single time. The bondage of sin is something that we all have been under. Now, of course, the point of that Paul is making is that the gospel frees us from that bondage. Through the gospel, we are freed from those shackles. But here he's still driving home that point. Back in chapter 2, he said, for God is no respecter of persons. And that's what he's trying to get the Jews to see, that there's no difference between them and the Gentiles. All have sinned, therefore all are in need of the gospel. We sang the song sometime, the gospel is for all. You know the statement, where sin has gone, must go his grace. That's what Paul's saying. All have sinned, all are under sin, and all are in need of the grace of God. Friends, the same is true for us tonight. Where would we be without God's grace? Friends, we'd be lost. But God did extend his grace. God did send His Son. His Son did offer His life on the cross. And because of that sacrifice, His death, His burial, and His resurrection, you and I have now the hope of heaven. We have the forgiveness of sins. And what a wonderful thing that we can take advantage of. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we hope you'll take advantage of that sacrifice. You'll put Christ on in baptism, having those sins washed away. Maybe you are a Christian, you've done those things, but you've turned away from Him. Come back home tonight. All have sinned. All are in need of forgiveness. And thanks be to God who offers it to us. If you need to take advantage of that tonight, we'd ask you to come right now as together we stand and sing.